Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. 3:43, 3:34, 3:36, 3:37 PM in the Monday afternoon here in South Africa, Lanesia, on the doorstep of Africa's most famous township, Soweto. Yep. We are living cold and fast and furious, I can tell you what. Very, very, very furious, reading in the Sunday Independent yesterday about ongoing tender corruption, lockdown tender corruption here in Gauteng. And apparently, our health MEC is involved through his wife, according to the Sunday Independent. Well, our health MEC has announced that he's completely innocent today. We were cheered over the weekend to note that Cyril Ramaphosa, does he actually live in this country? Is he a South African? I think we need to start investigating this. Is this Ramaphosa? He's from South Africa, huh? This Ramaphosa is from South. He doesn't know anything about what's going on in the country. He's always shocked about things. He says now that he's concerned. He's concerned about corruption in South Africa. He's concerned about tender corruption in South Africa. Not just any corruption, tender corruption. He said he's concerned. Well, you know, Mr. I promise, but I don't do, President Cyril Ramaphosa. You know, we're in actual fact, the people who live in this country, South Africans. I don't know if you've heard of us. We're in actual fact a lot more than concerned about the corruption. In fact, we are so furiously irate that we're in actual fact at the firing squad level of, anger about corruption. We've reached firing squad level. I wonder if old Cyril will ever find himself in front of a firing squad. I think there'd be a good reason to put him in front of a firing squad due to his inaction on corruption. He says he's very concerned about corruption. But I suppose, you know, if I was Cyril Ramaphosa, what would I say? I would say, look, it's not my fault. I've never been a president before. I'm still getting the hang of these things, man. Come on, leave me in this job for the rest of my life and we'll see if I can handle it correctly or not. That's what I'd say if I was Cyril Ramaphosa. I've never done this job before. What do you expect? Come on. But, Cyril Ramaphosa, Mr. Clean, Broom, Sweep Clean, dude, director, man who wears ties. He's a responsible guy, you know, understands business interests, understands business concerns. He's Mr. Clean. Ah, he's a nice guy. White people like him. He must be good. Turns out, no, you know, he can't trust white people's tasting anything anymore nowadays. I'll tell you what. No, Cyril Ramaphosa came in promising to sweep clean, and the broom has been gathering dust in the corner ever since he took office in Tainos. Well, you know, we have had the state capture commission inquiry continuing, begging for money so it continues its work, because it turns out that it's kind of like broken through into an extremely rich patch of corruption, and there doesn't seem to be any bottom. In fact, one kind of like gets the feeling that the ANC is digging away at that bottom, and it's a pool that continues getting deeper and deeper and deeper. I don't think that as long as South Africans continue paying taxes, that Chief Justice Zondo, Raymond Zondo, is ever going to get to the bottom of that particular pool. Yeah, it's like, you know, when you feel you've reached the bottom of the barrel and then you start digging. And that's the kind of feeling you get out of the State Capture Commission. It doesn't seem as though the State Capture Commission is ever going to be able to issue a final report, because there's always going to be more corruption to try and unearth. Yeah, so, you know, we were waiting patiently last year for something to happen. And, well, I guess this year we're no longer waiting. I mean, in fact, I think most people are in actual fact losing interest in what is happening at the Zondo Commission. And people are, I think people are just starting to get used to the idea that we don't have a government, we have a gangster, we have a gang. We've got a gang. We've got a gang of completely amoral thieves. One feels they would sell their own mother. I wonder, would Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma sell her own mother? Can't do anything about corruption, because then you have to get rid of all of his comrades. And his comrades are just waiting for him to try and get rid of corruption. I'm going to get rid of him. Which means that as long as you're going to be paying taxes, you're basically handing money over to people to be stolen. That's what it means. Well, anyway, yes, it is a rather cold time to be a South African. We can feel the cold embrace of winter, and just on the edges of its fingernails, we can feel the cold embrace of COVID-19. Yeah, South Africa continuing to register cases at an extremely large rate, 13,000 a day almost. Almost everyone being tested nowadays is coming up positive. I wonder if we reached a herd immunity, you know, saturation point. In which case there'd be no need to hold a lockdown anymore, but try and explain that to the government. Gold hitting $1,933 this morning. How about that? Highest price of gold ever. And now the gold bulls are saying that it's probably going to break through 2,000 very soon. And Bank of America is in actual fact saying it's going to break through 3,000 very soon. Problem with buying gold, however, are the security and holding costs. But a very low interest rates on gold. So, and the thing about, you know, when value starts disappearing everywhere, you want to try and hold onto it where you can. And gold is traditionally turned out to be pretty good at that. So as the stagnating economies continue throwing more and more paper money at their problems, and the rest of the world considers exchanging our real money for their counterfeit money, is the only way to describe it. You know, the reluctance is starting to set in, that the weight of disbelief is becoming insurmountable and unsupportable, and it's going to come crashing down on our heads sooner rather than later, one feels. Gold. Okay, well, we'll be having a look at gold a little bit later today. Well, schools and taxis, aren't they telling a rather dismal story, especially when it comes to lockdown? Government has shut down schools to try and prevent the spread of coronavirus, but it is allowing taxis to travel at 100% capacity as long as they keep windows open 5 centimeters. Oh boy, I've spoken about this before on the show. Anyone who's traveled in a minibus taxi on a regular basis knows that in minibus taxis you don't travel with the windows open. No, I'm sorry. You don't travel with the windows open, because you see, a lot of the people traveling in minibus taxis are struggling a little bit for food, you know. I say many times on the show that the human idea that has moved more history than any other, more than liberty, equality, democracy, justice, and all of that, the one human idea that has moved more history than any other is the idea that there is no food at home. And that is an idea that is uppermost in many people's heads as they travel by minibus nowadays. Fortunately enough, to be able to travel by minibus, many people simply can't afford the fare. Yeah, well, anyway, anyone who's traveling minibus on a regular basis knows you don't travel with the windows open, because many people are struggling for food. are struggling for nourishment. Many people are slightly undernourished or severely undernourished in minibus taxis. Some of them are really well fed, of course, too. Sure, fine. But, you know, there's a good mix in any minibus taxi you get into. And people who are slightly undernourished are also susceptible to catching a cold, catching the flu, you know, getting a coronavirus. You know, your immune system is not at its best. You travel in a minibus and some idiot in front of you opens the window because he had to run to catch a taxi. And suddenly you've got an icy cold draft blowing over you, and you have to keep that draft blowing over you for a good half hour, 45 minutes. By the time you get out of the taxi, you are sick as a dog. It's almost that fast. It's almost that quick. So if you're in a minibus taxi, it has always been the tradition that you travel with the windows closed, no matter how hot it is. Only every now and then, you know, do you get a little gogo who reach over and open a window just a tiny fraction. So, yes, I don't know, maybe Fakil Mbalula hasn't traveled by minibus taxi for a long time. I mean, how long has he been in cabinet now? Since about, what's he been in cabinet now? About 10 years. I guess maybe that's long enough to forget what it's like to be down on the street. But unfortunately, you know, most people who travel minibus taxis know that this is like one of the unspoken golden rules. You don't open the windows, especially on a hot day, because people are going to get sick. I've caught a cold from somewhere. However, I don't have a temperature or anything. So, you know, the hopes of spending a few weeks at home. Yeah, no, I'm afraid not. I'm not going to be able to take time off. I have no temperature whatsoever. This is a purely a sinus infection. Excuse me. Private schools finish their year. Private schools will finish their year. Public schools will not. This is a lockdown double whammy. It's a lockdown double whammy. Government is trying to impose conditions on the country that the government is unable to implement itself. We must all stay at home. We're in charge of our homes. Government is in charge of the schools. Now, we can't reopen the schools because government is incapable of implementing, standard operating procedures and so on, or enforcing them. Or following up on them, or making sure that the consequences aren't too drastic. Government is unable to implement its own lockdown measures. That's what it says. Taxis traveling at 100% occupancy rate means that in actual fact we don't have a lockdown. You know, South Africa is turning into the land of pretend. The land of never, never. Maybe we should try and elect Peter Pan to be the president, the next president. Because you see, you've got people pretending to be journalists, people pretending to be policemen, people pretending to be presidents. So why should it be that strange if suddenly the whole country is just pretending to be in lockdown? You know, because a lockdown, you're either locked down or you're not. You know, it's supposed to be scientifically rigorous and so on. But there's no lockdown if people are traveling 100% capacity in minibus taxis. We said at the beginning of the lockdown, minibus taxis are going to have to be restricted. If they're not restricted, then there's not going to be any lockdown. And if they are going to be restricted, government is going to have to subsidize the minibus taxis. Otherwise, the minibus taxis simply can't run. You know, eventually you're going to run out of money and you can't buy the petrol to run the taxi. It's that simple. Unless, of course, now government's going to pass a law that the minibus taxis have to push their taxis into Joburg. I think there may be some not inconsiderable support for such an idea. Given that most motorists are accustomed in South Africa to be overtaken by minibus taxis who don't stop at stop streets, who don't stop at robots, who don't wait in line, you know, maybe they should pass a law just for a week or so, you know, that minibus taxi drivers have to get their loads into the city by hook or by crook or they face jail time. And then all the minibus taxi drivers can go and push their minibuses into the town. But, you know, that's a ridiculous, it's a ridiculous suggestion. And it's not going to be implemented. We know that. Yes, we know it's not going to be implemented. It's a ridiculous idea. But it does illustrate to you the impossibility, you know. Either you're going to have lockdown or you're not going to have lockdown. So, you know, South Africans, they don't like their play being interrupted. Particularly, you know, when it's a great gateway to rape, you know, and murder, you know, the favorite South African pastimes. 85% of all rapes and murders happen on weekends when people are drunk. 85% all linked to alcohol consumption. Here the government is getting the whole country not to drink alcohol. But at the same time, we're not in actual fact in a lockdown. Now, everyone's pretending. We're pretending to have a lockdown. We pretend we've got a president. We pretend we've got a cooperative governance minister. You know, one of the most uncooperative people in the world is our supposed cooperative governance minister. So we know that Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma is also only pretending. Everyone knows that Cyril's only pretending. Look what happened when they put him in charge of the turnaround, the presidential turnaround team at SAA. Well, it turned out he was only pretending there. They put him in charge of the presidential task team to turn around Eskom. Turned out he was also only pretending there. Now we made him the president and he's still only pretending. So now the whole country's decided, well, we're also just going to pretend, you know, everyone's getting like really snazzy face masks on and so on. And in the meantime, the COVID continues spreading. In the meantime, we continue having an extremely low death rate, alhamdulillah. Well, we've got to go for a quick commercial message, inshallah.
WhatsApp us on 084-786-3132.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. 12 minutes past 4 is the beautiful time on a lovely Monday afternoon. Hope the life is treating you well. And that Allah Ta'ala is protecting you and your loved ones from COVID. And if you do have loved ones with COVID, may Allah Ta'ala bless you with afia and cure. Oh Allah, protect us from the evils of this coronavirus and grant us increase in the good. Many people have lost loved ones. As a result of this coronavirus, we've lost some of our leading ulama to this coronavirus. It's made us pull together as family. I get a feeling of a lot more closeness nowadays, you know. That's what hard times do, you know. It's sad, you know, but the best times don't bring out the best in us. It's the hard times that bring out the best in us. You know, this is the time when the olives are put into the press. This is the time when the pure oil is extracted. This is the time when the chaff is discarded. This is the time of Al-Furqan. This is the, is this a determinant in some way of right and wrong? How are we all going to respond to this whole thing? And what is the correct response? Is there only one correct response? Well, you know, grateful we are that we live in the land of pretend. Because, you know, even if our answers don't make any sense, we can always pretend that they do. And Mr. Pretender President Cyril Ramaphosa, well, he's holding a lot more fantasy speeches and newsletters he's sharing with the country nowadays. And he's saying that, that the country's economic recovery has to start, and it has to start now. We need to work together to make it happen. You know, that sounds really good, doesn't it? That sounds like a president. That's the kind of thing a president says. But you see, if you read a lot of Cyril Ramaphosa's speeches and literature, you find a tendency to say, we will. We will. That also sounds like a man who's confident, doesn't it? Yeah, but it's always referring to the future. You see, we need to start, you know, the president is always saying, we need to start, you know, he says, right, okay, we know that we've, you know, people have lost their jobs all over the country. People's businesses have shut down. And most people, in fact, really, 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 really hate my guts. That's understandable. In fact, maybe it's even desirable, you know, leader, you know, every now and then his followers have to hate him because he's implementing the discipline. But in actual fact, most people hate Cyril Ramaphosa because they've lost their jobs and there doesn't seem to be any solution to this crisis that he has created. You know, pretending to be a president, pretending to be a government. Why did you implement this lockdown in such a manner, in a manner that is suited to European conditions instead of South African conditions? Because the United Nations told me to do so. No, I'm sorry, that's not what a president says. A president doesn't say things like that. A president gets things implemented, you know, and then he goes to find out how the implementation plan is working. You know, Cyril Ramaphosa sat on top of the constitutional committee that drew up our constitution, and he drew up the constitution on time, on deadline. You know, why doesn't Cyril Ramaphosa use some of those skills and smarts that he got in that process, you know, while he's president of the country? The Constitutional Committee would say, okay, right, we've got these various difficulties to work through. We've got opposing forces on either side. What we want all of you different working groups to work out is a map, a roadmap going forward, and implementation plans and implementation dates. And then we want report backs to find out how you are faring regarding the implementation of your plans by the implementation dates. By sticking to that, by ensuring that log jams were removed whenever they came like a major sticking point, you know, they would work out a way to overcome that sticking point. It was truly amazing. I kind of wonder, maybe Cyril Ramaphosa wasn't really in charge of the whole process. Maybe it wasn't the hands-on guy. Maybe it was a guy, you know, like the Queen of England, you know, when the photographers arrive, he goes and stands at the door and he waves. Because we did. We got that constitution delivered on time. May 10, 1996. Bing! There was our constitution. I felt so good. I was most impressed. I'd even gone and studied constitutional law just for the privilege of being able to understand what the heck the document said. Yeah, so if Cyril Ramaphosa could do that back in the 90s, maybe it's just not a, you know, maybe it's just a shadow of his former self. But yes, as we say, Cyril Ramaphosa has lost that discipline that he used to have. Because now discipline, the only discipline that Cyril Ramaphosa implements is to speak about the shiny future. Never about what is happening now or how things have been implemented in the past. No, our government, our president always speaks in airy-fairy terms, you know. He says the path of recovery will be long and difficult, but it needs to start now. He says this isn't the time to despair, but now it's the time to act. He says that social partners need to speed up the pace of implementation to rebuild the base of our economy. We need to now pursue new sources of growth within a fundamentally different context. In the coming weeks, he says, the government will finalize an economic recovery program. You see, we're going to be doing something in the future. Always saying something now, always kicking the can down the road, always pretending, pretend, pretend, pretend. I wonder if Cyril Ramaphosa really exists. Maybe he's a bit like that 1980s guy, Max Headroom. Please let me sleep. He's like a computer-generated image. I've never actually met the man. I've never met Cyril Ramaphosa. Met some of the greats of the previous generation, but I've never actually met Cyril Ramaphosa. I can't tell you personally if the guy in actual fact really does exist. I really question whether he actually lives in the country. Maybe they've got like a ghost writer writing his stuff who lives in Iceland or something. Completely out of touch with what's going on in South Africa. That would explain some of his presidential letters, his unpresidential presidential letters from the presidency. So anyway, today he rolled out a major spending plan, which we'll get into a little bit later in the show. But basically all it is promises and plans to get into infrastructure spending that we've heard many times over the last 5 or 7 years or so. You know, we're going to build this thing, we're going to build that thing, we're going to, like, you know, we've got a whole lot of projects and things. Yeah, you see, we've got specific projects we're going to implement and spend. When are you going to do it? In the future sometime. No rigorousness like we saw when he was head of the Constitutional Committee. So anyway, fortunately for us, gold is like shooting the lights out. Had a record this morning, $1,933 a fine ounce this morning, the highest gold price ever in the history of mankind. And AngloGold Ashanti also said this morning, like many gold producers, their share prices have shot through the ceiling, giving an unbalanced effect on the JSE, while many other companies are still in lockdown or facing shutdown permanently. On the JSE, the NASPAS and the gold producers are giving it a lift, but it hides a lot of pain, I must say. Liberty 2 degrees, which owns a lot of malls like Sandton City, Eastgate, and Melrose Arch, said this morning that foot count at its centres is still only at 55% compared to last year. Well, anyway. Tito Mboweni, I think, is a bit like he is the ANC's Judas goat, you know. A bit like Cyril Ramaphosa used to be the Judas goat. What is a Judas goat? Well, you know, at abattoirs, when animals come off the truck, you know that they're stepping into trouble. They can smell blood in the air. They can hear the screams of animals inside the abattoir. And they can tell there's just like a horrible, horrible kind of feeling around the whole abattoir. I know these things because, you see, I grew up in Springs and I went to a school called Pine Grove in Standard 1 and 2. And we used to have to go and do our soccer practices at the Pan Brink Stadium, which was right next to the Springs abattoir. So, I don't know, maybe it was like that's how apartheid used to try and make its youngsters tough, you know. You know, we'd go and have to like play soccer there, the young tender years. Their ears ringing to the sounds of screaming cows. If you've ever heard a cow scream, it's amazing how loud a cow can scream. You know, we'd be playing our soccer to this screams going on. It was a very bizarre way to learn soccer. I think it maybe explains why I've never really... I really love playing soccer. I still do love playing soccer, but I've never been able to follow soccer. Maybe that explains why. Maybe it's because, you know, here in South Africa, it's got like this, like Manchester United, Liverpool, British football. And I've never been interested in watching British football. Even during apartheid, I wasn't interested in watching. But even when I was in Standard 3, I can remember. Well, anyway, yeah, so abattoirs, you know, the animals coming off the truck, they, you know, they know that this is a very horrible place we're stepping into. It's very dangerous. I don't want to get off this truck. And the animals don't want to get off the truck. They don't want to move into the abattoir, you know, and it can be very, very dangerous. You know, cows, when they start bolting, they can kill you with just a squeeze against the wall. So, you know, in order to prevent that, in order to make it easier to get the cows to come off, or to get the goats or the sheep or the pigs or whatever it is. You know, you have Judas goats, you have Judas cows and so on. They have a Judas goat, a goat that is very well fed and it's petted and looked after at the abattoir. So this little goat, like, you know, gets used to the sound of the screams and the blood and everything and lives a happy little life. And when a truckload of goats arrives at the abattoir, oh, the goats are standing there at the entrance to that passageway leading into the abattoir, and they don't want to go there. And suddenly, tick, 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 tick. Trotting up the corridor comes this little Jew, just go, meh, meh. Oh, and all the other girls say, oh, no, there's a girl too. We'll follow that one. And then they follow it off into the dark interior, never ever to return, except in little cans, you know. So, yeah, Tito Mboweni, I think, is the ANC's Judas goat. People are becoming increasingly concerned that our country is falling apart in front of us. And we need some kind of reassurances, you know, because President Cyril Kick the Can Ramaphosa is becoming increasingly unreliable, you know, in terms of public confidence. So we need somebody, you know, who's in exile, sort of semi-permanent exile in, what's the name of that town? Kizani. Up there where the Rain Queen lives. That's where Tito spends his weekends. He goes and visits his mother, and that's a very good thing. Tito Mboweni, you should try and build on that. Build on your family ties. Come on, go and build the clan instead of the nuclear family in South Africa, instead of destroying the clan with your banking and financial measures. Try and build the clan and start a family-based company, a new tour sort of company in South Africa. Anyway, we won't go into that. Tito Mboweni's always there. We will not allow this. We will not allow that. We will hold him accountable. This is only, we won't. We won't. No. But in actual fact, we all know that because Zanda Dlamini Zuma is a real doctor, no, in the ANC. And Tito Mboweni is just too nice and affable, you know, to say no to his comrades, his light-fingered comrades. You know, and he tweeted at the weekend, you know, after this news about the corruption in the hospitals in Gauteng came out with the MEC involved and everything. He tweeted, "The wrongs being done by unscrupulous thieves must be dealt with decisively. It is time that leadership led without fear, favor, or prejudice. Watch the space." Watch the space? He asked, "What kind of people are these criminals? What's the space? Which space? Outer space?" You're stargazing. He's trying to distract us, I tell you. No. We know that he means what's this space, meaning that this space that I stand on, I will be held accountable. I will stop these people. Well, we do remember in your budget last year, Mr. Mboweni, yes, there are unfortunately some people who actually go to the bother of remembering these things. You know, we're not all pretending to be journalists. And yeah, there are some people who remember your budget speech last year. In that budget speech, you said that, yeah, we are going to give bailouts to state-owned enterprises, but they're not going to be without conditions. No, we're going to have implementation plans. You know, all of those things that Cyril Ramaphosa used to do while he was the head of the Constitutional Committee. You know, we're going to have strike dates. We're going to have implementation tables and roadmaps, and you're going to have to implement these things. And you're going to have people from Treasury looking over your shoulder to make sure that you're managing your state-owned enterprise properly and that things have been done properly. There's not going to be any easy money. And straight away, Eskom switched the lights off and said, "We want some money." And Tito Mboweni, like, counting out all of those rands, making sure that his signature isn't on it. Some of the old rand notes, you know, he should get really guilty about handing out to his comrades. But nowadays, at Lesetse Kanyago's name is on the thing, so he feels a lot better about it, you know. So a lot of work, you know, to signing your name onto every single blooming 100 rand note that came in front of you. So glad he doesn't have to do that anymore. Yeah, so anyway, Tito says, watch the space. So I think, you know, we're actually going to see more evidence of the South African government combating corruption by raising our eyes into outer space and hoping to see some kind of like flicker of meaning in the far distant Milky Way than we're going to see if we watch Tito Mboweni acting as Superman against corruption. Because I'm afraid, you know, Tito has proven himself far too friendly, far too affable, and far too soft to be able to be the kind of guy who's going to stand up against corruption. Okay, well, we've got to go for a quick commercial break because it's the top of the half hour.
You are listening to Merkez Sahaba, the voice of Ahl Sunnah.
Assalamu alaikum. 4:32 is the time on a lovely Monday afternoon. Well, South Africa's presidency, there's a news report coming out this morning from Bloomberg. South Africa's president says it designated the country's priority infrastructure projects, paving the way for the beginning of private investment in a 2.3 trillion rand program over the next decade. How about that, Adamin? And there you were just saying, like not 2 minutes ago, that President Cyril Ramaphosa isn't president for implementation and he's just pretending. How about there? 2.3 trillion rands worth of infrastructure investment projects has been outlined by Mr. Implementation himself, Cyril Ramaphosa. What's your complaints about? Well, let's just go and dig a little bit deeper into the story, shall we? The Presidential Infrastructure Coordination Commission Council. You know, South Africa's renaming commission really needs a new name, as well as to come up with a few new members, I think. Anyway, the Presidential Infrastructure Coordinating Commission Council issued a list of projects ranging from key water supply and irrigation developments to energy, roads, housing and fish farming plans. While to date most infrastructure has been funded by the state, the country is now settled with debt and coronavirus outbreak has limited the amount of money available. The government is now seeking funds from development finance institutions, multilateral institutions and private pension funds. Yes. That's what it's all about, you know. They don't worry about the projects. They just want to get their hands onto your pension money. Well, you know, if I did have a retirement fund, if I did have a pension fund, I would go and cash it in right now. I don't know what I'd invested in. It's very difficult to decide what's going to be reliable. The only reliable thing, I tell you what, that you can invest in today is family. Everything else is going to disappear in a puff of smoke, I reckon, within a few months or a few years. The announcement is the first step in getting the drive announced by Ramaphosa last month going. Oh, well, it's the first step in getting it going. That's nice to know. In actual fact, that's not really true. In total, 276 projects. How about that, Alameen? 276 projects, and you say the president is just a kick in the can down the road kind of guy. 276 projects. You can't argue against that. Just wait, just wait. 276 projects have been earmarked for potential development. Still, says Bloomberg, many of the projects have been planned for years. In other words, it's just cold soup being served up as biryani. We know the difference between soup and biryani. This is cold soup. The gazetting of the list is welcome, says Peter Attard Montalto. The gazetting of the list is welcome, but seems to lack any detail at all, and we still await a policy statement. It's unclear how the projects can be invested in, he said. You know, you're going to need a lot more, you know, President Cyril Ramaphosa. So he's probably just saying, you know, we'll try and persuade the people to do so. And then we are going to force them to invest their pension money in it. Ha, 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 ha. Wonderful. Isn't it great? It's a great pension fund ripoff. Yes, and it's been led by Cyril Ramaphosa. Anyway, enough of poor, sorry, sad Cyril. Let's move on to gold, because gold is undoubtedly the story of the day, unless, of course, it's the IMF is in negotiating terms with the government as to a 4.3 billion rand loan. It's supposed to pay for a lot of the projects that are now supposedly being rolled out by the government. But anyway, so because we're not going to hear anything out of that, but probably until much later this evening, we're going to focus on gold. Gold's unrelenting march higher shows no sign of slowing after a plunge in the dollar swept prices past the previous high set in 2011 and put the metal on track for even bigger gains. Bullion's surge came as the gauge of the U.S. currency sank to the lowest in more than a year, the latest in a long line of bullish factors, including negative real rates in the U.S. and bets the Federal Reserve will keep policy accommodative when it meets this week, that are pushing prices ever higher. In other words, you know, it used to be that stimulus would get the currency to increase in value. Now stimulus is in actual fact doing what it's supposed to do, get the currency to decrease in value. Now I'm wondering about the dollar starting to fall. Is this just the natural pull of gravity? After so many years of hot air, eventually now gravity is starting to assert itself. so many years of funny money. I mean, you know, it had to fall down to ground sometime or other. You know, the hard realities are starting to bite. Is that what we're seeing? Or is the United States now on a policy of a weaker dollar in order to try and undercut Chinese competitiveness? People are saying that China's economy is going to match the size of America's GDP dollar for dollar much, much sooner rather than later, because China is now on, has regained its growth, and America looks as though it's going to continue shrinking. So how that one's going to turn out remains to be seen, but it is possible that the U.S. Fed and the White House are not starting to talk off the same book. With the world facing an extended period of unprecedented economic and political turmoil, gold's now got $2,000 in its sights. Some in the market suggest the haven could rise even beyond that. As we said earlier in the show, Bank of America is predicting $3,000. Nascent signs of gold record-breaking ascent began to show in mid-2019. Remember, we spoke about it with Mark Mobius, former head of chief economist for Templeton Asset Management, no link. But we did say that, yeah, Mark Mobius has made a very good call today. I think if you want to buy gold, now is a good time to buy it, because around it was below 1,300 in those days. Nascent signs of gold's record-breaking ascent began to show last year when the Fed signaled a readiness to cut interest rates as uncertainty, primarily about the impact of the U.S.'s trade battles, clouded its outlook. The rally gathered pace in early 2020 as geopolitical tensions rose and the coronavirus outbreak hurt growth worldwide, pushing governments and central banks to unleash vast amounts of stimulus and sending real interest rates slumping to further into negative territory. Strong gains are inevitable as we enter a period much like the post-GFC environment, that's global financial crisis environment, where gold prices soar to record levels as a result of copious amounts of Fed money being pumped into the financial system, said Gavin Wendt, senior resource analyst at MineLife. A weak dollar, negative real rates are providing further impetus. Gold may consolidate before setting its sights on 2,000 and above in coming weeks, he said. Investment demand has been unrelenting. Holdings in gold-backed exchange-traded funds have beaten all-time highs nearly every month since late last year, and inflows this year have topped the record annual total set in 2009. So that's in just half a year. In addition, the additions make up roughly one-fifth of expected mine supply for the year, according to research group Metals Focus. Gold's been drawing investors even as equities climbed, with the exception of a sharp sell-off in March as traders liquidated bullion holdings to cover losses in other markets. And I did call that at the time, and I said that's exactly what's happening. Oh, keep quiet, Alamin. Stop blowing your own trumpet. And it's U.S. bonds that have been the key metric to watch. The metal is serving as an attractive hedge as yields on treasuries that strip out the effects of inflation fall below zero. The environment has even raised the specter of stagflation, a rare combination of sluggish growth and rising inflation that erodes the value of fixed income investments. The U.S. investor expectations for annual inflation over the next decade, as measured by a band metric known as break-evens, has moved higher the past 4 months after plunging in March. Inflation also plays an important role in looking at prices in the historical context. Spot gold traded as high as 1,944 on Monday, topping its previous record by more than $20. But when adjusted for inflation, bullion remains lower than its 2011 high and far below the historic peak in 1980 in the wake of the second oil price shock. So in other words, the gold bulls are trying to mutter to the market, there's a lot of upside here. The price is going to go a lot higher. Buy it now, buy it now. But then that's what they're always saying. It's not just price moves that are proving historic. The virus shined a spotlight on its traditionally overlooked corner of the market, logistics. A chaotic period in March saw extreme distortion between London and New York prices due to an unprecedented snarl in the movement of physical metal, with the grounding of flights and refineries shut down, sparking concerns about a shortage of bullion available in New York in time to deliver against COMEX futures. That crisis eased. There was enough of gold. But the dislocation prompted the CME Group, that's a Chicago Metals Exchange Group, which owns COMEX, to announce that it would offer a new futures contract with expanded delivery options that included 400-ounce bars, which is the size accepted in London. It later said that traders will be able to deliver gold in London vaults against the new contract. Next up for investors and a possible fillip for gold is this week's Fed meeting, where officials are expected to keep interest rates near zero and debate a possible shift in its strategy. The meeting may be a platform for a strong message that change is coming, opening up the possibility for more unconventional policies further down the line. In other words, more printing of money and pretending that it's something else. According to Chris Weston, head of research at Pepperstone Group in Melbourne, if we think about real yields and what the Fed is doing, it just suggests to me, he says, that it's a matter of time before real yields continue to trend lower and gold goes higher. In other words, we're going to meet a tipping point in credulity. Are people going to lose complete faith in the dollar? And will that faith ever come back again if it does go? The Fed's path will be closely watched. From December 2008 to June 2011, the Fed bought $2.3 trillion of debt and held borrowing costs near 0% in a bid to shore up growth, helping send bullion to a record in September 2011. Since then, they've taken on a heck of a lot more debt. Forecasts of further gains have been building even before gold's most recent breakthrough. Goldman Sachs said the metal would reach $2,000 in the next 12 months. Citigroup puts a 30% probability on prices topping that level by the end of this year. Bank of America has stuck to its April forecast for $3,000 gold over the next 18 months. You simply couldn't pick a more perfect storm of events which would allow for gold to perform, said Steve Dunn, head of ETFs at Aberdeen Standard Investments. With low interest rate policies, negative real rate, super accommodative monetary policy, huge amounts of global fiscal spending, a weaker dollar, escalating U.S.-China tensions, and no clear end in sight for the coronavirus pandemic, all of the parts of the equation are coming together. Please excuse these. Every now and then you'll just hear a little bit of a silence just for about 3 seconds. That's me sneezing or coughing in the corner here. Boy, we're going to have to put these air conditioning on full ball before someone else can come in and take over. Well, now, you know, it's easy to forget now, but there was a time early on in the pandemic when the price of gold was in free fall. And that was when people were having to sell their gold holdings in order to cover their losses at the start of the pandemic. According to Bloomberg, it was a curious thing, what with the virus sparking a collapse in the global economy, and it would prove in time to be one of the great head fakes in the recent history of financial markets. For the pandemic of 2020 would soon show itself to be the driving force behind some of the most ferocious rallies the gold market has ever seen. At the close of trading in New York on Friday, bullion had spiraled to $1,902 an ounce, some 30% higher than the low it hit in March and just 1% of a record high set back in 2011. The virus has unleashed a torrent of forces that are conspiring to fuel relentless demand for the perceived safety from turmoil that gold provides. There's the fear of further government-ordered lockdowns and politicians' decision to push through unprecedented stimulus packages. You see now, it's really nice to see this now. You know, the reality is starting to dawn on, you know, in America and Europe. You know, when you see mainstream wire services like Bloomberg or Reuters saying things that are causing fear. Politicians' decision to push through unprecedented stimulus packages. You see, Bloomberg and Reuters have always sold those as being positive for the market. Now, for the first time, Bloomberg is also starting to acknowledge the force of gravity and that all things become payable. All things are due. The price will be exacted. And now, unprecedented stimulus packages are starting to increase uncertainty and fear in the market. That would indicate that that tipping point for the dollar as well as the euro could be a lot closer than many of us expect. Yeah, okay. things that are pushing fear, okay, politicians' decision to push through unprecedented stimulus packages and also adding to the fear are central bankers' decision to print money faster than ever before to finance that spending and the plunge in inflation-adjusted bond yields into negative territory in the U.S. and the dollar's sudden decline against the euro and the yen. This is the one that I think maybe the United States is letting the dollar decline. And of course, we've also got rising U.S.-China tensions as well as rising U.K.-Russia tensions and so on. All of these things, when taken together, have even triggered concern in some financial circles that stagflation, a rare combination of sluggish growth and rising inflation that erodes the value of fixed income investments, could take hold across parts of the developed world. In the U.S., where the virus is still raging and the economic recovery is stalling, this debate is growing louder. Investor expectations for annual inflation over the next decade, as measured by a bond market metric known as breakevens, has moved higher the past 4 months after plunging in March. On Friday, they hit 1.5%. And while that remains below pre-pandemic levels and below the Federal Reserve's own 2% target, it is almost a full percentage point higher than the 0.59% yield that benchmark 10-year Treasury bonds pay. The main driver behind gold's latest rally has been real rates that continue to plummet and don't show signs of easing anytime soon, Edward Moyer, senior market analyst at Oana Corporation, said by phone. Gold is also drawing investors' concerns that stagflation will win out and will likely warrant even further accommodation from the U.S. from the Fed. U.S. bond markets have been a driving force behind the rush to gold, which is serving as an attractive hedge as yields on treasuries that strip out the effects of inflation fall below zero. Investors are looking for safe havens that won't lose value. The mania for gold right now has trickled down to Main Street. Retail investors have helped put ETF holdings backed by gold on track for an 18th straight weekly gain. The longest streak since 2006. Meanwhile, gold posted its seventh weekly gain Friday, and analysts don't expect the increases to end anytime soon. Let's go and have a quick look quickly at what the gold price is doing. Maybe it's done something interesting in the meantime. But last I looked, it was still around about, I think it was the 1,930s. 1,944 dollars and going up all the time. That's from ShareNet, the spot price at the moment. In fact, that's 15-minute delay on the price, but yeah. $1,944. When interest rates are zero or near zero, then gold is an attractive medium to have because you don't have to worry about not getting interest on your gold, Mark Mobius, who we spoke about earlier, told Bloomberg. I would be buying now and continue to buy, he said. Analysts have been predicting huge upside for gold for several months. In April, Bank of America raised its 18-month gold price target to $3,000 an ounce. According to Francisco Blanch of Bank of America, head of commodities and derivatives, he says the global pandemic is providing a sustained boost to gold, citing impacts including falling real rates, growing inequality, and declining productivity. Moreover, as China's GDP quickly converges to U.S. levels, helped by the widening gap in COVID-19 cases, a tectonic geopolitical shift could unfold, further supporting the case for our 3,000 target over the next 18 months. You know, reading between all of that, it's in actual fact China's GDP reaching equilibrium with the United States, becoming the same size as the United States, dollar for dollar, you know, the real measure. That has Bank of America putting that 3,000 target. That means that they expect to see it sometime this year. And why is Bank of America not telling us and the rest of the world about real growth rates in South Africa instead of propaganda coming out of the Fed? Bank of America's bold prediction was made after gold prices initially dropped in March as investors sought cash to cover losses on risky assets. So that was a very, very bold prediction, I must say. You know, I wasn't willing to say $3,000, but Bank of America, that has to put their money where their mouths are, actually said $3,000 in March when the price dropped. That was when I said, yeah, it's people sending out in order to cover their losses, because people make a huge amount of losses on the stock market. Stock markets started falling through the floor as lockdowns and COVID-19 arrived. And that meant that a whole lot of people had to sell off a whole lot of stuff. That was also the time of the Salman bin Saud thing. I can't remember that guy's name. The murderer who apparently is going to be the next the next protector of the Haramain. Yeah, that murderer. Yeah, remember Jamal Khashoggi. Yeah, that guy. He started pumping. He said, we're going to increase oil, the oil price. The oil price started shooting through the roof. And so I pointed out that, you know, this is the kind of change, market change, that hurts billionaires rather than you and me and ordinary millionaires. Because, you see, gold and oil oil is the most, by volume, is the most traded commodity anywhere in the world. So it's a vital part of any portfolio. And because the gold price is usually like sort of fairly steady-ish, you know, you can kind of like fairly safely make predictions about the gold price over 6 months and so on. But suddenly the gold price fell down to minus $37. Remember that? And people were hurting all over the place. And not just ordinary people like you and me, the billionaire people, the 0.0001%. They were hurting. They were hurting. I said, it's not going to be long before Salman's going to get a call from the White House to change all of that. And that is exactly what happened. But anyway, we said that given the worries about the coronavirus, given the worries about oil, that means that gold should be going up and instead it's going down. And that can only be happening because the billionaires have had to sell off a whole lot of stocks had to sell gold in order to cover their losses in equities and oil. That's why the gold price is going down. I said on my show that that is probably a buying opportunity. You should take advantage of it if you are going to be buying gold. Of course, buying gold is also a question all in itself, because you see, you have to. Alhamdulillah. Excuse me, please. You have to find a safe place to keep it, you know. And, you know, if you want to transport it and take it places, well, in actual fact, that's when it becomes really useful, because, you know, you can keep, like, you know, gold coins and, you know, you get all these different size, bars and so on. It can be very useful. All of it tax free and none of it. You know, they can't tell when you're using gold to pay for something unless you've got an electronic transcript of the payment. Anyway, Bank of America's bold prediction was made after gold prices dropped in March. So, as I say, that was a very, very, very brave time to make that kind of call. And Bank of America is still sticking with it. That means Bank of America, as far as I can tell, has made a call on the rates of decline of the American economy, and they've made a call on the rate of recovery of the Chinese economy, and the fact that they're still sticking to that 3,000 price by the end of next year means that they believe that their takes on the U.S. economy and the Chinese economy remain intact. So, yeah, that means we're in for very, very interesting times. And, you know, that really does explain Donald Trump's, like, you know, turnaround. He's like really turning on China nowadays, isn't he? The UK turning on Russia. They can see that the time is coming when the United States is not going to be the indispensable nation. Imagine if China suddenly starts saying that it is the indispensable nation. Oh, boy. Let's just hope that the Chinese don't turn out to be like the Americans. But you know that saying, better the devil you know than you don't know. Oh, well. The Chinese have been far less rapacious than the Americans, I must say. They've been restrained in terms of military interventions and so on. They haven't murdered a million Muslims lately. And this is why I actually look forward to China, like, you know, knocking the United States off its pedestal. It's going to be a really interesting day if it ever does arrive. But it would seem according to Bank of America, that's going to happen sooner rather than later. Okay, this isn't the first time gold has gotten help from central bank stimulus programs. From December 2008 to June 2011, the Fed bought $2.3 trillion worth of debt and held borrowing costs near zero in a bit to shore up growth. That sent bullion to a record of 1,921 in September 2011. But stimulus continued. So why didn't gold continue rising? Yeah, you know, very little interesting question. Don't ask those kind of interesting questions. You're going to end up confused and in a madhouse. The crisis a decade ago was all about banks, said Afshin Nabavi, head of trading at Swiss refiner MKS Pump. He says, to be honest, I do not see the end of the tunnel. He said, at least until U.S. elections in November. In other words, he sees price the gold continuing to rise. Well, here's old Elon Musk, the billionaire, South African billionaire genius from Pretoria. He's now getting into bed with Nazi Dan and Gertler. Ah, well, there you go, I suppose. That's the cousins acting typically, I suppose. Elon Musk showing his white South African credentials there, I suppose. According to news coming out today, Elon Musk may help sanctioned Israeli Nazi billionaire Dan Gertler get a little richer. Tesla, the company Musk runs, struck a deal last month with Glencore to buy as much as 6,000 tons of cobalt annually for use in the rechargeable batteries that power its electric vehicles. Glencore, in turn, is obligated to pay Gertler about 2.5% of sales from its mines in the Democratic Republic of Congo. Royalty rights he acquired from state-owned miner Gecko Mines. What makes the arrangement eye-catching is that Gertler has been blacklisted from the U.S. financial system since December 2017. Now he stands to indirectly benefit from an American company's payments, if only by a few million dollars a year, since most of the cobalt Tesla's buy-in will come from Glencore's Congolese mines, according to people familiar with the matter. Tesla said it aims to eliminate cobalt from its batteries to reduce costs. That would also remove reputational hazards associated with sourcing minerals from Congo, including human rights challenges posed by artisanal mining, which provides income for millions, but where fatalities and child labor are common. Well, I'm afraid, you know, we're going to have to leave Elon Musk hanging on the hook until tomorrow, when we shall return and dismember him. Yes, indeed. It has come to the end of the show. We're not ending the show right now. We're going to be going across for the 5 o'clock news. After that, I'll be doing a Zika program. As my Chanka has taught me, it's the days of Eid, and it's coming up from Maghrib, and that means it's the best time to make Zika.
You are listening to Merkaz Sahaba, the voice of Sunnah Wal Jamaah.
Well, inshallah, I've committed myself to doing a short Zika program towards the end of the show, up until the Maghrib Azan. Nabi Kareem sallallahu alaihi wasallam said, now is the best time to make Zika. Now is the best time to make Zika, as the angels are changing their shifts. The Zika I'm doing is about a tasbih, as taught to me by Sheikh Ibrahim Mir, rahmatullah alayh, and by his son, Sheikh Isaac, of the Chistia Silsila. Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. La ilaha illallah Muhammadur Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. La ilaha illallah. La ilaha illallah. La ilaha إن الله لا إله إلا 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 الله لا إله إن 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 الله لا إله
Hello. Ya Rabbi, salli wa sallim daiman abadam ala habibika khairil khalqi kullihim. Allah
Alhamdulillah. Allahumma salli ala Sayyidina Muhammad wa ala ali Sayyidina Muhammadin wa barik wa sallim wa sahaba ajma'in wa amilin wa salam wa li mu'minun wa mu'minati wa li muslimun wa muslima jazalahu ala Muhammadin sallallahu alayhi wa sallam bima huwa ahlu ya Rabbi salli wa sallim daiman abadam ala habibika khayri al-khalqi kulihimi. Well, Jazakum Allah for joining us. Yes, it's come to that sad part of the show where the sun is dipping towards the horizon. Darkness is starting to spread across the earth. The cool night has arrived. Now let us make this night a blessed night. This night of Eid, a blessed night of Eid. O Allah, have mercy on the Ummah of Nabi Kareem, sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. O Allah, guide us to the best of deeds and morals as none can guide except Thee. And save us from bad deeds, O Allah, as none can save us from what is bad except Thee. O Allah, we beseech Thee to bless us with Thy love and the love of those who love Thee and love for every action that will bring us closer to Thee. Jazakum Allah for joining us. I make dua that whatever trade and activity you get up to today is profitable and above all halal. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.